Hello, and welcome to AgTech So What, brought to you by the AgThentic Group. I'm Sarah Nolette. In this episode, we're starting our AgTech Careers series, which we're bringing to you in collaboration with the Future Farmers Network. Let's face it, AgTech as an industry barely existed even 5 years ago, so there's not really a well-worn path to break into the industry. I'm guessing it wasn't on the radar of your high school career counselor. So to kick off our series, we're looking at breaking into agriculture and AgTech, and what it takes, especially when you haven't grown up on a farm, or when, as some of our guests today say, you don't look the part. What does that mean? Well, our four guests are all women of color, and today they share their stories and advice on breaking into AgTech.
Early days, it was a few cases of mistaken identity, particularly with China's influence in the wool industry. It was, you know, are you linked to one of the mills? Are you someone's daughter? Are you a foreign exchange student?
So while I think that, you know, some of the barriers that I'd faced initially getting into the industry was tough and was challenging, I think that there are now some incredible opportunities, especially for young people in agriculture, to make an impact and difference and elevate their voice in the industry.
That last voice you heard is Rayali Banerjee. She's now the communications manager for Syngenta across Australia and New Zealand. But getting into agriculture in the first place certainly wasn't easy. And how Rayali did it is one of the more intelligent and downright brave ways I've ever heard. You'll hear that story in a moment. But first, this is Rayali on why she became so passionate about ag in the first place.
I was actually born in India, and then I actually grew up in Malaysia and Singapore for about 8 years before moving to Melbourne back in 2003. So my actual exposure into the agriculture industry actually started when I was about 13 years old. And it was when my family took me back for a trip to India, to the eastern part of India, which is where I was born. And we were visiting a few temples in the countryside. And on the way back home, we stopped by a smallholder farming village. So I hopped out of the car, and at such a young age, I was interacting with these farmers who were expressing their real sorrow about the tough time that they were going through on their farm because they didn't have access to good quality seeds, machinery, and there was basically not a lot of support from the government. And so they were really struggling to feed their families. And as a 13-year-old, I always questioned why it was that in Australia we have access to fresh food, water, and smallholder farmers in developing countries really struggle to feed their families. And so growing up, I did a lot of humanitarian work. And when it came to choosing a career, I wanted to choose something that I knew I would have a direct impact on society and the environment.
Rayali went on to study agricultural sciences and business at university and loved it. But one thing was different for her.
I was pretty much the only person in my year who was not from a farm. So it was pretty challenging because I remember having a chat with my peers, and they'd almost have this language that is spoken in ag, and I wouldn't really know what they were talking about or necessarily understand some of the concepts. Like, I didn't even really know what it meant to have a yarn. So yeah, I was pretty much the only person with a non-farming background, and that was pretty challenging actually. So
other than the jargon, that is definitely true. Was it difficult because of, like, you don't get it, or you're not really in this, or, you know, that kind of thing, or just more difficult because of that jargon and you didn't really understand, like, all the different terms?
Both. So I would say definitely there was a cultural piece. Like, I'd never grown up in a country or in the country or on a farm. There was, yeah, the jargon piece, but also I didn't have an understanding of farming systems either. So yeah, it was a mix of everything. But what I was really wanting was hands-on experience. It was great to experience it in the classroom, but I wanted to get my hands dirty because I felt that's what ag is all about, you know, really understanding what's happening on the ground and on farm.
So did you manage to do that?
Yeah, I did. It was really challenging at first. So, I mean, throughout the first year of university, it was so tough because I would reach out to potential, like, industry placements. I would try and find opportunities to get that experience. I didn't know anyone in the industry. I didn't have any connections. And when I kept getting rejected, I felt that the opportunities were mostly for people who came from that background and had that sort of knowledge. And so what I did to overcome that is I actually ended up creating my own opportunities.
She certainly did make her own opportunities. This is the story I mentioned before of how Rayali got into ag.
I still got told that I didn't have the necessary skills. And the biggest part of my journey into the industry that I found a challenge was that I look different to the average person in working in the ag space. So for me, it was all about building my own brand in the industry. So I did everything from, of course, a big part of it was research. So I Googled every single conference, every single networking event that I could possibly get myself along to so that I could not only share my passion, but so I could hear stories from other people, other leaders in the industry who've made such incredible impacts. So I remember there was one specific conference I wanted to get along to meet some of the different leaders in the agribusiness and ag innovation space. And I Googled the conference. It was $3,000 and I was 21 and broke. And I thought, how am I ever going to get myself along to something like this? And so what I did was I actually ended up calling up the conference organizers who were based in Hong Kong and New York at the time. And it was a couple of hundred extra dollars to my phone bill, but I said to them, you know, this is who I am, this is why I want to come, and they let me come along. And it's at that conference where I truly feel like it was a life-changing moment.
Really?
Because it's where it really was.
What happened at the conference? What was so exciting about it?
Well, I was the youngest person in the room, filled with CEOs and international leaders in the agribusiness and ag innovation space. And it was almost like an open book, because it was an opportunity for me to soak in all of this information, all of this knowledge, and then actually do something with it. So what I did was I made my way around listening to the stories of each of these incredible leaders. And it was a pretty daunting experience, because I didn't have nearly enough insights that I could share back. But what I found really surprising was that these leaders in the ag space were really keen to share their knowledge and share their learnings. And I took all of that away and I continued keeping those connections.
That's a theme you'll hear a lot in this episode, the importance of mentors in building your network of connections. Sam Wan, the other voice you heard in the intro, found a key mentor very early on who actually steered her in the direction of agriculture. Now, Sam is an award-winning wool broker for Elders. But growing up in a city, she says she barely understood where food and fiber actually came from.
So I'm originally from Blacktown out of Western Sydney, and I'm first-generation Australian born. So I started in with the local high school that had a hat full of black Corridale sheep that used to get toted around to schools. I thought for a long while I wanted to go into IT, and it just so happened a teacher at the right time and the right place headed me off on a different direction, and now I find myself working in the Australian wool industry, which is pretty incredible.
Was there a moment when wool was put on the radar and you started to go down that path?
Unfortunately, I don't think I can really pinpoint it. At some point it really got under my skin and it hasn't left. So after high school, uni was expected, particularly in, you know, the Australian kind of Chinese, more so the culture there is you're expected to go to university. So I went to Sydney Uni and did a degree in ag science. I very much enjoyed more the on-farm. I had a little trouble writing reports and getting focused on that front, so took every opportunity to go on-farm and do more, seeing the hands-on practical elements of what agriculture was doing and how different things like small changes could influence a bigger scope. I did take some time off and did a Cert 4 in agriculture at TAFE just to get more of that grounding, hands-on, spending some time in cattle yards. And that really, I think, cemented it through once seeing it really on the ground. And then the opportunities, once one door opened, it was really a case of finding out so much more could be done. And using the skills that I picked up in, you know, understanding some of the IT systems has really, really come to the forefront now as agriculture evolves.
What was that like, your first time on a farm? Like, was the farm like you thought it would be?
So one of my favourite things to tell people is I used to think that corned beef came from a can, like until I'd had actual corned beef. So that still sticks with me, and I still have canned corned beef in the cupboard for different kind of dishes. It was different because I remember going out to like the petting zoos in Sydney that are still around and enjoying that connection to the animals and thought, you know, the animals were something great. But then once you saw the whole network of how everything between the plants, the animals and the water and one kind of synergy, I think that's all. There was no one point at all. It really just all came together in one hit.
Were people accepting of you coming out to farms? Like, what was it like for you? You know, like it's kind of a different world than like asking, I know for me, asking silly questions and like not knowing how stuff works. And yeah, what was that like?
I guess I've had some really great mentors who were prepped me up, and I have never been afraid of asking the stupid questions. I guess it really comes down to learning. Early days, it was a few cases of mistaken identity, particularly with China's influence in the wool industry. It was, you know, are you linked to one of the mills? Are you someone's daughter? Are you a foreign exchange student? So it was great to kind of put people on the back, not the back foot in a bad way, but it got them to stop it and think a little bit further about how the industry is evolving.
That's the unpleasant side of agriculture. And while, as Sam says, things are evolving, racism, unfortunately, still does exist in the industry. Rayali says when she was first starting out in her career, it would cause her to doubt herself.
A couple of examples I can think of is walking into a farm or a regional town where I was meeting a couple of people from the industry and having comments thrown at me like, oh, you don't look like what I was expecting, or because I, you know, obviously have an Australian accent, you know, I would say I'm definitely Australian, of course, with an Indian background. And so that immediately sometimes would put a doubt in my mind that, you know, okay, if I'm not what they were expecting, can I mm-hmm. perform or can I meet expectations?
Yeah.
But that self-doubt, I overcame that self-doubt really quickly because I've always had a growth mindset, and every time I've had setbacks or I've had a failure, I always pick myself up and I say, you know what, I'm going to take this as a learning lesson and I'm going to go on to the next experience.
Did it ever make you question, like, did any of those barriers you've talked about make you question whether you wanted to be in agriculture?
It never made me question if I ever wanted to be in agriculture because I'm so passionate about the industry, but it made me question myself. It made me doubt my capabilities and my own passion and my own knowledge. And there were certainly times when I felt so low because I had gone through these experiences of being called out for looking different or maybe not understanding something because I hadn't had the exposure. But even though, yes, those were negative experiences, I had gone through these negative feelings and feelings of self-doubt. The flip side and the other side of the coin is that I had incredible mentors and incredible people in the industry supporting me along the way and telling me that, no, you can do it. Don't listen to people who ever tell you you can't do something.
There's little aspects that kind of pinch that you remember, but I think you definitely grow from them. You learn how to, and it's in your own personal development as well. It's in yourself how you learn to react to that. And I definitely had that in the first couple of years, that elevator pitch, very much prepared to explain the who, why, and why I was here and why I was interested. Look, there is in every industry, you are going to have some pockets that aren't as receptive to others, but it really just lets you focus on those positive individuals that want to give you a chance. And look, if you're there to improve, then if they don't want to take you on board, they're the ones who are missing out. But being, I guess, pigeonholed into not understanding because I'm not looking a certain way before I've even gotten the chance to open my mouth is a very hard thing to go through. I think in the wool industry, look, there is talk about women and ag, but I'm, again, fortunate that there's been some absolute groundbreakers who have come through the industry but haven't closed that door. So I don't think it's really so much a girl thing. I think it is just looking a little different on the ground. But look, if you can eventually get over that. It just stings a little bit.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that. Sorry, Sam. I think the idea that, you know, ag is receptive and there are really good people, but I believe increasingly strongly in calling out the bad actors and helping ag to question when things can and should be different and when we're maybe not helping to make them different as quickly enough. So appreciate you sharing that story. Do you remember what your elevator pitch was or has been? I actually like use that tactic for sure to have the like one liner of why I'm here and build credibility in one sentence. Do you remember what you said?
Gosh, not really. And I think I still have to have those elevator pitches when I'm dealing now with, you know, different external companies and things like that. I vaguely remember it being, because I think it was being in uni and it was essentially, I was a uni student, my interest is in agriculture and I want to be able to see how things work and why decisions are made.
Cool. That's great. Got to keep it brief, otherwise they stop listening. So I hear you. Our next guest says difference is very much a good thing. You might already know her. It's Cass Mao. She's part of our team here at the Agthentic Group, working in impact investing for Tenacious Ventures and running boot camps with producers for farmers to founders. Unlike Rayali and Sam, Cass didn't start out with a strong passion for agriculture, although I think she's building one. She landed in the ag tech world through working with startups.
So Tenacious Ventures, we mostly spend our time talking to startups and hearing kind of the pitches of companies who are building technology that they want to bring to the agriculture industry. And then on the other side, we have Farmers Founders, which is focused on delivering programs to support producers to take a leading role in creating and adopting innovations. So on that side, it used to be a lot of traveling around the country, going to regional towns, running workshops, talking about tech and starting companies and how to do it and why you might and what could go wrong. So super different ends of the spectrum in terms of the Tenacious side is pretty classic kind of tech conferences and Silicon Valley jargon and talking about exit multiples, and the Farmers to Founders side is eating barbecue in a small regional town and chatting to growers about how the season's going. Pretty big difference.
And how do you find, like, personally that balance of kind of one foot in both of those worlds?
I get told by both sides that I talk too quickly, so at least there's some middle ground. I really like it. The grower side, I think actually in both worlds, it can be challenging to be a young Chinese woman for sometimes similar and sometimes different reasons. I mean, I think I'm someone who likes a challenge. I think in both the tech world and in the ag world, I felt sometimes out of place or like I don't necessarily belong there and needing to kind of overcome that sensation and step up and be confident and talk to people, even despite that, I think is a pretty defining part of being a young person in a industry. We spend a lot of time going out and running workshops, and you turn up at a workshop and whatever you imagine agriculture to look like, it's often like a bunch of older guys, I would say, who are predominantly white, and turning up and setting up your MacBook laptop with your manicured nails from the city and your high-heeled boots is usually a funny moment. We work really hard, I think, to occupy a space which is recognising that we're different, recognising that we're bringing a perspective which isn't, I'm your mate from down the road and we share the same experience of the world and we know the same things. I think there's a lot of value in saying, look, we come from a totally different part of the world. We see totally different things. We really care about doing a good job and we want to get it right, but we're not pretending to be like you. Like, I'm not putting on the clothes and acting as if I grew up in agriculture, because I didn't. And so I would say sometimes that goes well. Like, people appreciate, like, hey, there's young people who have no particular reason to be interested in this, who are out here doing this stuff and like visiting farms and putting in the long hours driving around, and they see the value of that and appreciate it. And then there's people who are like, who are you? Like, why are you here?
You've got the tech world and the agriculture world, but then ag tech kind of sits in between the two. Do you think that that requires different skills or different perspectives, or is attracting different kinds of talent? Like you mentioned impact before, is there anything in that niche that's different than tech and ag?
Yeah. I think it's hard to comment without seeming biased. Like, I think once you're in a space, then you see everything through the lens of that space, but it does for sure feel like agriculture and regenerative ag and people being vegetarian, like that kind of whole big theme around ethical consumption, I would say is bleeding into average people's lives and their general awareness, even in kind of like my social circles and age group. But the kinds of people who are drawn to actually working in ag, I think you have to commit for the long slog. Like, there's a lot of work, I would say, to build relationships, to learn about the space because it is so complex and so varied, and it doesn't have necessarily the same sex appeal, as it were, of other spaces in tech, like fintech or medtech or whatever, where it's kind of very established and loved by investors for being fast to scale and blah, blah, blah. Like, I think ag tech is getting sexier, but is probably attract someone who is willing to put in like a different kind of effort and a longer period of commitment perhaps.
And that's something that all of our guests agree on. Once you get into ag, it's hard to leave. For those born into the industry, they say it's in their blood. For those of us to join later, it must somehow seep in. I know for me, a big part of my passion for ag is the people I get to work with in this industry. And in terms of a career, agriculture is very much based on connections. But knowing how to make those connections can be slightly different to other industries. Here's Cass again.
I think that there's a lot of people on the tech side who want to get into ag or want to meet growers and find it really hard. And then I think on the other side as well, that there's growers who really want to adopt tech and really want to better understand it and find things to use and find it really difficult. So there's definitely a translation discovery problem in the middle, which is not to say that the tools don't exist, but that I think we assume that the tools that exist to help find things like that work, and I don't think that they do. The fact of the matter is that on both sides and between the two sides, like in most places, the way we find out things is through our social network, and your access to someone who's well connected basically I think will determine how easy it is for you to get into that world and find out. So I think that you can do a bunch of networking or connecting. I think going from I'm someone who's not in ag and I want to get into ag, I'm going to reach out directly to farmers in Emerald, you're going to find really hard. It's almost certainly the case that what you want to do is find someone who's on like in the world of ag tech who has those connections, right? Like you have to go multiple steps through the network to get there, which is exactly how you'd approach trying to get a job in a company that like you want to get a job at Salesforce, you don't know anyone at Salesforce. You work out how many degrees of separation you are from someone who can help you get in. It's the same thing, I think, in ag, like just taking a strategic approach to moving towards where you're trying to get.
Cass says you also need to be prepared to spend the time to build and earn trust with farmers and others in the ag industry.
So a lot of the way that we'll run workshops is we'll find people in the local area that we want to go to. We'll basically send an email or pick up the phone and say who we are and what we want to do. And you get people who are receptive and you get people who aren't, and it's just doing it until someone says yes. But the kinds of reception you get are like, come and stay on the farm and run this workshop in our old barn and we'll see who we can get together and Bev will make cookies. Like it's proper kind of country hospitality often, which is great. And then it's turning up there and knowing that like often it's not going to be the workshop where you're going to get lots of engagement and deliver lots of value and get a lot of trust. Like it's almost never the case. It's actually, you really need to stick around and chat to people for half an hour, 3 hours after the workshop. And that's where they'll actually be like, so tell us about this thing that you do. And you're like, oh, you just came to a workshop that I ran for 3 hours, but you're not quite sure what it was about. Great. Let me try again. And it's in those one-on-one conversations that you actually get kind of like, that's really interesting. Oh, I actually know this person. Oh, have you thought about this? And so in some ways it's like turning up in the community and actually spending the time. It's like a conference, right? Like people don't really come for the content. You're really mostly there for the networking. And so just having the ability to stick around and have the slow conversations of what feels like small talk to build trust is really, I would say, the door opener long term.
One of the things that's interesting about ag that we've talked a little bit about is how you're not often like sending emails and setting up Zoom calls. It's like text and phone and like even different forms of communication. Has that been your experience?
I think that it's probably actually drastically different post-COVID. It would be, I wish there was some kind of longitudinal way to look at how people have adopted technology in the last 6 months, but definitely emails and so on, you know, not the best way to reach people before and probably still not the best way, but I think willingness to get on telecons to learn about things for the first time is higher for sure.
Rayali actually ran her own networking sessions outside of work to build connections in ag and ag tech for herself and for other young people.
So just in terms of on the people breaking into the ag tech or ag industry, I actually ran my own initiative called Ag Boot Camps for a couple of years. And it was something that I took as a learning out of university, because going through university was so tough being new to the industry to actually break in. And so the whole purpose of Ag Bootcamps was to help connect students who were from diverse backgrounds, not only culturally or linguistically, but also from, they might have been studying engineering or science or IT and they were trying to get experience in agriculture. And this was so rewarding for me because I had, you know, I had one woman actually reach out to me on LinkedIn one day and say, you know, I've just arrived from overseas and I'm studying a degree in agriculture, but I'm really struggling to get experience because of my accent. And that should never be a barrier as to why someone is offered an opportunity. Because to me, when I actually connected this young woman with a business that actually ended up providing her with some work experience, she had incredible knowledge of international ag markets that she could bring in to this business and provide value that way. Yes, she was new to the whole culture that we have in the ag industry, but that should have never been the reason why she didn't get an opportunity. So I don't run ag bootcamps as much as I did, but I still am really passionate about making those connections and helping young people to make those connections. Because I look back on my journey and I would say that thanks to my mentors, I've really been able to accelerate my career in the ag industry. And I really want to look back and help other people do the same thing. In terms of advice to young people considering a career in ag or ag tech,
she's not the only one passionate about helping others in their ag tech careers. Amy Wu is a California-based journalist who has spent the last 5 years writing the stories of female entrepreneurs in agriculture and ag tech. And now Amy has a website dedicated to this called From Farms to Incubators and a book that's coming out soon. Amy started this whole initiative because there were too many untold stories of women in this industry.
I was a reporter covering agriculture and local government in Salinas, California. I think it was 2016 I was assigned there. So agriculture is a $9 billion industry in Salinas. 80% of the leafy greens that we eat here in the U.S. are grown in the Salinas Valley. So I was fascinated with the amount of agriculture there. I mean, I've come from New York. I'm basically a city girl. And I was like, wow, all these vegetables, who's growing them? How are they being grown? But what I did notice was there were not a lot of visibly and not a lot of women leaders or women CEO level or entrepreneurs sort of in that space visibly. And I really wanted to uplift the voices, like new voices that I didn't really see in either agriculture or technology. And I thought like the women were just amazing in that they're creating the innovations for the growers to solve some of the biggest problems in agriculture.
Do you see any particular challenges for women or people of color in ag tech as distinct from in agriculture or in technology? Like, I think both ag and tech are traditionally male dominated industries, but what are you seeing in ag tech specifically?
In the beginning, I saw, especially with the women that I talked to, they faced more challenges because there were not a lot of women, honestly, in that space. And actually, the space was pretty new. Ag tech was really a fledgling sector back in 2014 and 15. But as it's become more and more known out there in the general public, there's been some high profile deals and investment in this area, you know, recently in the past year. And I think growers too, increasingly wanting to have to try out the innovation and technology to be more efficient and to save money and to get, make sure that they produce more. They've been seeking out innovations that work. And it doesn't matter what color you are, or what age you are, I'm finding that they are just wanting something that really, that works.
Hmm. Is there anything that surprised you in your reporting and hearing these stories?
What has surprised me, which shouldn't surprise me really, is the persistence of the women in the space. I mean, now we're moving on to the fifth year where there were a handful of women that I talked to in the beginning. And it's incredibly challenging being an entrepreneur in the first place. It doesn't matter what industry you're in. And it's very challenging raising your money and hiring people and making sure you can pay yourself. So a lot of, I think the statistics are out there that a lot of small businesses and startup businesses fail anyway. So I'm surprised that they're all still there actually. And they're all, doing rather well. I mean, and during the pandemic and COVID, I think there's been a growing interest in their innovations and technologies, and they've been continuously raising money. So it's a really good surprise.
After speaking to so many women wanting to break into ag and ag tech, this is Amy's advice.
Don't give up easily. Continue with it, network, and really take advantage of the accelerator programs and the programs out there. I have some women who moved across the country from New York to California to be closer to growers. So do what you need to do to keep pursuing your mission and your goal. And I've seen it repeatedly with the women that I've talked to. And also, seek out mentors as much as you can. I mean, meaning really, like if you go to a conference or a summit or just even a webinar and you see a woman that you're like, oh, wow, what she talked about is really interesting, like follow up with her. And most people, I think, in the space really want to give back. In some ways, they want to see more female founders. They want to have a place to connect with other female founders too.
And she says, don't be afraid to keep telling your story right throughout your career.
I think a lot had not really been covered in the media before. And this is why I kept saying, wow, you have a story to tell. You have something, your voice to share. So, but now, like 3 or 4 years later, I think a lot of them are like, well, now calling me up, like, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, or can I share that with other media? And I think storytelling and media is a really important channel because that's the way that you share what you're doing with the outside world. Actually, I think it's critical to tell your own story and to make sure that your brand is out there.
So let's hear from our other guests one last time with their final takeaways about their careers in ag and advice to others wanting to break in. We start with Sam Wan.
It's a hugely dynamic, supportive industry. I've got mentors from when I was in high school that I still keep in contact with, that still check up on me. The support is there. It's really just being able to, and it sounds so cliche, just put yourself out there and ask the questions. But it really is. Agriculture is so practical and hands-on that once you're willing to show that you've got that interest, and you might find a different kind of niche, like wool has definitely been mine, and I've continued to follow that through, but you never know what joins the dots for you in your head or in your life. Wool has very much turned into my life. So it's just being prepared to take that chance that something can change your life very much for the better. Now, I would never have dreamed in a million years I would be up the front auctioneering. So that's been one learning curve, but also how the supply chain is intertwined. We're seeing it particularly now with COVID. I keep an eye on things. I never thought I'd subscribe to Vogue fashion magazines purely to see what the new trends are in terms of wool. I'm watching the dollar. I'm talking about carbon farming and new apps. So there's every day is something new. And look, I don't think it's going to stop. So the surprise doesn't stop.
One of the things I love about working in ag is there's all sorts of experiences out there, right? Like I've had plenty of people who have been various levels of mean or cruel or rude or disinterested. Like kind of you get that everywhere. But fundamentally, I think there's something like there's such a good spirit and such a good sense of humor in farmers. And it's like it's just part of what it takes to do that, to have the mutant farmer gene and stick it out. And so you can have like, you can have so much fun.
It's so important to say yes. It's so important to be curious and to be open to any opportunities that come your way. It's so important to have a growth mindset, to tell yourself that no matter what challenges you face or, you know, failures you might face, it's important to have someone to talk about it with and then work through it and understand there are certain steps you can take to reach for what you want to reach for.
And that's it for another episode of Ag Tech So What, brought to you by the AgVented Group. We look forward to bringing you the next in our careers series, again, in collaboration with the Future Farmers Network. If you're looking for ag tech jobs, we've included a few resources on our website. Please check it out and let us know if you have any suggestions for things we're missing. And if you like this episode or know someone who'd be interested in it, don't forget to tell your friends and please leave us a 5-star review. We'll be taking a short break over the holiday period, but we'll be back with the next episode in early January. I'm Sarah Nolette. Happy holidays and catch you next time.